Sine Curve of Aeons by Corey Sharman. Sine Curve of Aeons, Vitalis, 2014. This book is dedicated to Sparky, Ranger, and Thor. We can know no better friends than those who see our inner selves, despite us trying to hide them, and who can hear our inner thoughts, though we thought we could never share them. Thank you. A special shout out to the archetypes in our collective unconsciousness. You are more than just voices in the dark. Keep speaking your truth. Prologue. Jessu looked back with cold numbness at what was coming. It was done. Certainty was a place of calmness that she found she didn't mind. Not as much as she would have thought. Her whole life had been leading exactly to this moment. She now knew in a way that was beyond all doubt. The truth was, she had always known. As the ground beneath her began to groan and whine, in simultaneous tones of shrill soprano and grumbling baritone, it was almost as if she had been here a million times. She now understood what the elders referred to as déjà vu. Like looking through a mirror reflected in a mirror, and trying to find the end point that just wasn't there. She had thought she had glimpsed this bizarre and infinite moment at little times in her life. It often felt like, almost like a remembering. A small set of experiences in waking life, as though they had been dreamt before, but more groggily. She had always been admonished by Markia for believing her meaningless moments of sitting in the kitchen and pouring chai, or brushing her hair at her bedstand could be true déjà vu. She spared a moment of remembrance for her elder, now lost forever. Except this time she could see it clearly. That point where the endless mirror's reflection ended was here. It was now. She had been here before she was born. She had been here 10 billion times before that. Sirnuna's words had been utterly true. She had always known this fraughtness to the air, this pale and fiery light from the sky, this trembling moaning of the planet itself, these strange sounds rumbling through her body. The knowingness was a center, an origin point in the vast calm that possessed every fiber of her at this minute, at this minute instant of chaos. Some sensation in her fingers, like electric impulse, drew her attention away from the perfect yet unmanageably terrible truth unfolding not only before her, but also inside of her. The point of origin of this perception was clasped in her long fingers. The stylus. The sacred tool was imbued with all of the intention of the culture she couldn't imagine the loss of. Centuries of progress, philosophy, science, study, insight, and power lay, all as one, inside the simple structure in her hands. And even so, despite all they had accomplished and built on this blue planet, utter destruction is what had now arrived for them all. And nothing could be spared. Despite this, or maybe exactly because of it, the tool at once seemed to vibrate in her hands like she never knew a fusel rod could. The beautifully worked details of the hilt started to nearly hum with intensity, and the feeling worked its way down to the delicate and arching yet profoundly and structurally sound tip, and Jessu's mortal frame was nearly overcome by the combination of the sudden snap back into a sort of human realization of the physicality inherent within the impending moment. I am going to die. Alongside this return to her senses, this urging, no, this devout begging of the fusel rod demanded that she do... She didn't know what. She wasn't quite sure. But she knew it demanded that she do something. Jessu realized just as instantly as she had realized the moment of their collective doom, and just as quickly as she had snapped back into her being to feel the momentousness of it all, she realized also that this was the calling. This was the feeling that some waited their whole lives for. But how could it have come to her? She was barely a scribe at all. She had only just been bound to her fusel rod to start with. She could barely have even begun, had there been time, to participate in the mass meditations of direction for the placing of the sacred stones after mastering the construction of a spheroid. She had only recently mastered the study of stars and the procession of the days of equality throughout the heavenly skies. How could the stylist already be calling to her? Surely it should have been Markia, Markia who should have lived instead of her, or even Janmin, for the love of Leo. But even in the midst of her internal struggle, she knew that a call was a call. As much as she might want to run from the solemnity of it, the hugeness of it, the absolute duty of it, to run back to the perceived safety of the mass meditations taking place in the city behind her, where at least she could experience unity before she died, where at least she could die with others and not alone as she was now, she could not. This was it. It was all up to her. She even knew without a second's hesitation what it was she was meant to inscribe on the giant temple she stood at the entrance to. The most valued symbol of the inner realm that seemed to have been given to her repeatedly over the years. Though no one was shown the symbol without a lifetime of service to spirit, she now intrinsically knew she had been given the image in dreams and visions for what seemed like an age. As the shape of interlocking arches and circles came to mind with more clarity than it ever had, Jesu turned to go back into the temple, leaving now the fire-brimmed sky of ruinous disaster behind her to seek out the place of carving where she would leave the last mark her hands would ever give forth. She wished that Galen had not gone, had been here with her at the end, to see her life's work come forth from the fusel rod that now quivered so quickly in her hands that it nearly seemed to glow as heat emanated from it and warmth seeped throughout her body. She spared a moment to think of it, that she would only want him near her in the end, that even in the midst of the strangest and most suddenly immense moments of her life, he would be utmost in her being. How sweetly she beheld their mere sprouting of growth toward one another in this life that was now proving too short for them all. No, Galen couldn't be here, though he would be in her heart as she carved. No one could stop that. She would remember the strength he had given her, and she would dedicate the work to him in her soul, though none would remain to know it. She held these sad but resolute thoughts in her mind as she turned, and just as she began to make her way into the cool and deep interior of the structure, the darkness was thicker and more black than she had expected, even from the shadowy parlor within. She had only time to register the sound of a hiss and a sputter, and then the cold rock floor that should have been below her was, disorientingly, upon her cheek, upon her whole body. She seemed to be standing no longer, or else the walls had quickly moved close to embrace her. Something warm trickled into her eyes and dampened her light curls with stickiness. The world was a thick and heavy kind of piece. The fusel rod, seeming alive, tried to hold on to its connection to her fingers before slipping, like a forgotten note, just out of her unclutched hand, clinking gently onto the clean stone floor. The earth gave a sudden heave below her, lurching like she had never known it to do, adding to her dizziness and the pain now spreading through her head. And then she knew no more.